Hello, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. Maybe it does represent a Grand Lodge position here, but you'll find out why. And then finally, to interact with us, send questions and comments to our feedback, which is found on the chat in the YouTube, chat on the Facebook. Love to see you all. If you're watching us live, hello and good evening. If not, hello and good evening while you listen to this later. So let's see. You know me. My name is John Ruark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. And we have the full house tonight. So let's go, without further ado, to Jason Richards. Hello.
Hello, Jason Richards here, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16, Clifton, Virginia, member of a couple other lodges as well, Colonial Lodge out of Washington, D.C., and Lafayette Lodge out of Ohio.
Yay!
So a triple jurisdiction Mason.
Nice. All right, well, let's head over to Joseph Martinez. You're in trouble? I have to use the full name?
Don't use my full name ever.
Okay.
Because I'm getting yelled at. Yes. My name is Joe Martinez.
Joe.
I'm a member of a lot of lodges. Let's see. I'm the senior warden of Manassa Lodge number 182 in Manassas, Virginia. I am a member of Benjamin B. French Lodge number 15 in the District of Columbia. I'm a member of Laurel Wreath Lodge number 149 in Maryland. I'm a member of Internet Lodge from the UGLE, and I am also a member, very awesome member, of the Kansas Lodge of Research.
Ooh, that'll be important later, I'm sure. Study for the test, folks. Next up, Robert Johnson. How you doing?
Hey, doing okay, guys. Thanks for joining us. Robert Johnson from the Whence Came You podcast, past master of Waukegan 78 in Waukegan, Illinois, and a current sitting secretary at Space Novum 1183, the premier education lodge in Illinois, also involved with Kansas Lodge of Research.
All the cool kids are doing it.
That's right.
All right. And our special guest host for tonight, we have the most worshipful Michael Stoops of the Grand Lodge of Kansas. So hello and good evening. Any other salutations and introductions you'd like to shout out?
I'm also a member of the Kansas Grand Lodge of Research, so that's great. Yes.
All right.
It's a pleasure to be here tonight, gentlemen.
All right. Couldn't go a bump for you, so thank you.
Thanks.
All right. We have a full house here. For those of you who will get
John, you've already later. Almost been expelled once.
Yeah. I'm trying to see how high I can go in 1 hour.
Yeah, all it takes is an email to the new Grand Secretary of the Grand Lodge of Virginia.
That's right.
Like, we're all done.
We're done. Show's over, folks.
Send another survey to everyone. Don't worry about it.
It was a nice ride while it lasted. But we're overdue for one, which is really important. So before we get into that, definitely want to give a special thank you to all the patrons who support the show. You guys are awesome. Been helping us upgrade tech and keep hosting costs down for a long time. And we're kicking around this idea. It's that time of year for maybe, possibly, a Secret Santa. That was a smashing success last year. So if you want to be part of this little Masonic Secret Santa, definitely head over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable and chip in a few bucks, and we can hook you up with a neat way. It was really special last year. I just had a blast giving a brother that I'd never met a nice little Christmas present. So fun stuff.
Yep.
All right. Well, tonight is a topic.
I just realized, yes, as I'm wearing my Masonic Revival camo square and compass hat, I want to give a big shout out to all my brother and sister veterans, whether you're Masonic or not, wheresoever dispersed.
Good
Thank
call.
You for your service. Thank you for your duty. Love you all. And I will shut up now. Masonic Revival. Good stuff.
They don't Thank you, Joe.
Us. Yes.
And thank you, Joe.
For your service.
Yeah.
Well.
No green beans today, because I love you.
Oh,
one day a year. Good stuff. No, but thank you for mentioning that, Joe, because it is a special day. We honor our veterans, and so it's something that we have. I mean, I have the data that says that we have basically, since we're talking about data tonight, we have twice the population of the general population of veterans per capita. So basically what I'm saying is, where I think where the U.S. population has about 14% are veterans, we in this fraternity have about close to 24%, 25%. So it's really great. And that's why we're so patriotic. So I think it's really exciting to include that part of who we are as a fraternity. So thank you, Joe. Let's shift gears tonight. We are going to talk about membership data again, because, the funny thing about membership is it keeps changing. And so I wanted to include Most Worshipful on this call, because he's done some recent digging about specifically what's going on in Kansas. So why don't I hand it over to you just to kind of give a little bit of overview of what you did, when you did it, what were you trying to discover? Because you made the circuit, you've been on a couple other little YouTube channels, so we don't need to go through the whole thing again, but obviously share that where they can find the whole set of data as well.
Sure. We presented the entire set of data at Rubicon Masonic Society's presentation, and that's on the Rubicon Masonic Society YouTube. I'm not a proponent of one-day classes, and I constantly get the same argument from those who are, that the retention rate of those members is the same as those that go through the standard degree work. Well, I'm a data guy, so if I had the data, I'd be putting it out there.
Right.
I'm not seeing the data. They never give the actual data. So being the Grand Master, I had access to all the data in Kansas, so I pulled it for the last 25 years, and the retention rates aren't quite what they told us they were, quite frankly. The summary of that I can share. That's the summary of the data that I pulled. This is 25 years worth of retention data. So 66% of one-day class participants drop out of Masonry. 60% of the C2A, the chance to advance, those are those that received at least two of their degrees in one day. 60% of those Masons dropped out.
Wow.
But the number is still not good for the standard path either. That's 50%. We lose half of them. So although those one-day classes are worse, quite frankly, the number across the board is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, so just to pause you right there, I mean, that's no small undertaking either, right? Where we always say, it's better to have this, the full experience, the full initiatic experience, and yet, even then, we're finding some deficiencies as far as longevity goes.
It's not better by much. Yeah.
Right.
No, right. In Kansas, that equated to the last 25 years, we lost 17,000 members through demit or suspension for non-payment dues. Well, we only have 13,000 members in Kansas. So we've lost more than what we currently have. So it was pretty shocking to pull the numbers and actually look at it.
Yeah.
Can you, just going back to that first slide, because I'm sure we'll see other slides. Can you explain for those of us who don't know what I think you called it the chance to advance is?
Sure. Chance to advance is when we did two degrees in one day instead of all three. Generally, it would be the second and third degree. So they would take their entered apprentice degree at their home lodge and then come to a group setting chance to advance class to receive their second and third. And our one-day classes were group settings as well. It wasn't one or two guys taking all three degrees. It was large groups of people taking all three degrees, taking them being sitting on the sideline watching somebody else go through it. But yeah, so chance to advance is just two degrees in one day versus all three.
Yeah.
Great, thank you.
So I think it's fascinating too, because I was just digging through some of my research too. And one thing that I present for the first time at the PA Academy of Masonic Knowledge over in, I think 2016, 2017, around that time frame. 2016. What I was doing was, I was going through all of the grand annual proceedings at the, George Washington National Masonic Memorial down in Alexandria, and just actually flipping through, finding where it's actually written down at the end of every year, because that's the most authoritative data I could find. And Ohio actually had this huge spike in 2002. And you can see the bars are shifted. You know, basically everything above zero is a gain, everything below zero is a loss. And Ohio was proud to mention that they had raised over 7,700 Masons in one day. So this thick blue bar here is because of that. And yet the big question remains, what does that do when you look at it in comparison to everything else, right? So this is this is a ratio of death to raising. And so basically, you know, when you raise a lot of people and you die at the same rate, then it's going to be very low. But other than that, it stayed pretty flat. And then the big shocker for me was, well, let me compare, let me look at non-payment of dues. People who actually leave because of non-payment of dues. And despite this huge pump at the red line of new members coming in, non-payment of dues got worse. So lower is worse on this graph. So we had more people demitting over time. But we had this huge pump in 2002, 7,700 Masons. So that there's a discrepancy there. So the obvious question is it causal or is it correlated? Right. But
yeah,
I didn't have access to that data. And what I think is beautiful about what Most Worshipful Michael's done is he's actually looked at the raw data. What before I jump into that, I also want to say I tried to do that for the Grand Lodge of Virginia as well. So, you know, my home jurisdiction, I wanted to see if I could pull that data. Guess what? We don't tag them separately. A Master Mason's a Master Mason, regardless of how they go. So it requires not only full access to the membership database, different conversation, and it requires you to know when the one-day classes were and who they were by name that got raised on that date. So then you can treat them as separate cohorts. Just a near impossible task. But you were able to get a little bit better than that.
Well, I was able to get access to their initiate and past and raised dates and then correlate whether those were the same or not. So I could say if two matched, it was a C2A. If three matched, it was a one-day class.
That makes sense.
Because I had their dates. So it was, I had to, you know, there was a lot of manipulating in the background to determine whether they came through in one day or not. Not manipulating, but determining that data. And I would say that, crunching. Yeah. I would say that the data you just showed on Ohio is exactly in line with what I found for Kansas because, in Kansas, I found that those who go through the non-traditional path, the chance to advance or the one day, they're 2.5 times more likely to drop out within the first 12 months.
What, two and
they don't even pay 2.5 times more likely. Yeah. They don't even pay their first year's dues. And then they're 13% more likely to drop out within the first 5 years. So it's that data, that bar, the blue and orange bars you showed. If you look 2 years down the road, 2 or 3 years down the road, you'll see that you're under the line almost as much as you were above the line before. For 2002, you're way above the line. By 2004, now you have a greater below the zero.
Look at that. Look at you. I love it.
I have also three questions about this. But go ahead, Jason. Go ahead. I know you wanted to say something.
I say also just a little bit of trivia. I just got back from Ohio. Attending Mike the intern's election or rather installation as master. Congratulations, Mike, Lakeshore Lodge number 307. But I found out that the current Grand Master of Masons in Ohio, Most Worshipful Brother Timothy Wieland, was a part of that big one-day class. So he was wow. He was actually made a Mason in that gigantic one day class. So
we should keep doing one day classes then.
So what I believe really set the Grand Master apart was after doing his one day class, he then stood proficiency in all the degrees. And so I think if we had the data on those brethren who are part of the one-day classes, and then you know, do the ritual work and put it in after the fact. It'd be interesting to see those dropout rates, because I bet you, you know, it'd be pretty close to keeping pace with the traditional path folks. But I have no data to back that up on. Mm-hmm.
So being from the Grand Lodge, Illinois, mm-hmm. we have we use Mori, and so Mori allows us to export giant amounts of data.
And that's a real-time database of membership, right?
That's right. Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's not even, I mean, okay, so I don't know how true of a, I'm not sure if their backend is a, for our data guys, if it's a database or if it's just like a massive Excel that, you know, you know, amends to the bottom of a sheet or something. But
the same thing.
No. So
every time, every time you use Excel, a data scientist gets his wings.
That's right. No. So my question, while it's kind of still fresh in my head, John, can you throw up that statistics sheet one more time?
For which state?
You had the bullets with the different percentages, the drop-off rates.
That was most worshipful.
Oh, most worshipful. Can you throw that up one more time? There you go. All right. So you're 66% of the one-day participants who dropped out of Masonry. And let's just take it all the way to the 60% mark. Does this mean that, or can you kind of say that 40% of them maintain membership until they're dead? Or is this just like for a given amount of time?
Well, I think he'll give you an answer to that.
So we did not start one-day classes until 1997. So I only went back to 1996. And so this is up till current time, excluding deaths. So I didn't take into account anybody that has died in the last 25 years that died while they were a Mason, that while they were still affiliated to a lodge. So these are the ones that unaffiliated of their own accord, either through demit or non-payment of dues over the last 25 years.
Interesting. So good visuals. I'm going to share my screen really quick with you just because you mentioned death. So I took a download of all of our northeastern area. So we've got five areas in Illinois. Northeast is pretty big. That's why we got our own northeast instead of just the north. And what I'll show you here, toggle screen sharing. I don't know why I like talk about it while I'm doing it. Anyway, so this is all of our lodges here in the northeastern area, and this is the average mortality rate. So you can actually see like some lodges as far as death go, like the average mortality rate for a man, how high all these lodges are. So like they're approaching. Like the average age is past the age that most people die.
Wow.
And this is 2 years ago. So like what the reason why I show this is one, because you mentioned death, and two, stop sharing now. And two is because, where did it go? Toggle screen sharing. They're off. Okay. And two, because the question I asked about that was, like kind of an out of the box question. I wanted to approach, because data is data, but like unless you have a good question you want to ask, it doesn't mean, you know, dingus, right? So my question was, how close are all the lodges in my area to being so old that like literally if the next guy dies, the lodge could shut down? So with that approach, I'm just curious about some of the data and the retention stuff that you kind of put together here. What was maybe one or two interesting questions that you guys were hoping to answer with some of the data you pulled? Because I think asking important out-of-the-box questions is key for the audience, because most guys are just like, oh, no, we had this many, we dropped this many, and they don't go any farther. They think that's it. They think that's the end-all and be-all of surveys.
Right.
And, sure, absolutely.
You know, so. Go ahead.
Well, let me comment on your life expectancy of Masons. The Scottish Rite did a survey as well, or a study, and it's about 10 years longer than the average. Most Masons live about 10 years longer. And a lot of people contributed to what we get out of Masonry, but I contributed to the fact that I spent a lot more time away from my wife. So I think that's what it is.
Nice. Don't worry. We can edit that.
We're in trouble. We're all in trouble. Trouble.
Yes. So the main question I had was, I wanted to answer the question, do the guys that go through the one-day classes, is the retention rate greater, the same, or less? Because we had a bylaw proposal last year that would require the Grand Master to have 2 one-day classes. And the argument was made multiple occasions that the retention rate is absolutely the same. There's no reason not to have them.
Show me the data.
Yeah, that's what I wanted, the data. Mm-hmm. So that was my first reason for pulling the data. But, you know, once I saw the initial data of 66, 60, and 50, I'm like, we have a wider problem. It's not just a problem of one-day class versus standard, because 50 is horrible. 66 is worse, but 50 is absolutely horrible. So then I dug into it more, and I wanted to see things like how did the size of the lodge affect retention rate? How did the whether those guys were... did they become masters of the lodges? Did they participate at the Grand Lodge level as officers of Grand Lodge, things like that? So it really spiraled into a lot of other areas because I wanted to dig into it more. I had an idea. I think it's the same idea we all have, right? If there's no value to it, you don't stay in it.
Right.
It's a value equation. What's the value of Masonry, and how can we fix that? So that's kind of where I went with it eventually.
So you mentioned the Scottish Rite, and this will be the last time I ask a question until you say something else profound, which will be in a few minutes. So my next question, and I hope I can, I don't want to monopolize you, but I'm going to for a second, is when you looked at the one-day class, right, and you see like what's the value prop for the one-day class versus the conferral of the 3D, okay, the whole the shebang. Now, have you been able to look at the numbers of, let's say, a Scottish Rite reunion, where typically it's always a class? Are their numbers the same? And so, if so, would you just attribute that to... That's why they, you know, do so many.
Yeah, I can attest to that. So I worked with S. Brent Morris, and he showed me some of the Southern Masonic Jurisdictions numbers. And what they had an interesting chart where basically... there was active membership for 3 years, then it dropped to about half, and then it went for about 20 years, and then it dropped even lower. And so as he interviewed these people, what he found out was the 3-year mark was that they've already paid for their first year dues when they became a Scottish Rite Mason. So that's the first year. Second year, they actually start collecting, and third year, they kick them out. So they're actually, there's actually a member, even if they're not very active, for 3 years on the books. Then those half or so finally get non-payment of dues kicked out. Wow. So those who stick around for about 20 years, but then there's this other corresponding drop-off. Why, you ask? They retire. They move to another state and maybe just look at their finances and say, you know, I've kept it going for this while, but I'm going to leave all my buddies, so I might as well just close up my membership while I move down to Florida or whatever.
There's so many interesting variables, right? Like, I didn't get active, and I joined the Scottish Rite, was basically inactive for 6 years before I got in line, right? Which was after everything else I had already done, you know? So... it's just so many different variables. That's fascinating.
Yeah, that was, again...
Well, like one of...
Go ahead.
One of my primary reasons for not having joined the Scottish Rite outside of just not having the time and having to be very selective with my appendant bodies is that, like, I don't want to go through a class. Like, I want to be able to see all of the Scottish Rite degrees at least exemplified.
Nick Johnson, hook you up in Minnesota.
Shout out to Guthrie.
I know Minnesota does it.
Guthrie, Oklahoma.
Does Guthrie do that as well?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
No, Guthrie does them all. In the fall reunion, I think, one of the reunions, the fall, the spring, they do all the degrees in a weekend or something. But then the other one is like the standard fare, right? Like your
4, yeah, 14, I got the 18, I got 32. The 5 degrees and a tuna fish sandwich. That was my that was my experience. So
was the tuna fish sandwich the best part of it?
I'm not going to answer that because there's people from my valley watching. So,
so yeah,
I'm not in your position, most worshipful. But I actually did have a question going back to that first slide. But Robert was monopolizing all your time. So there was one statistic you had on there that it had a 72% number. And I was going to ask about that one because that one looked interesting to me.
Yeah, so the 72% number is actually lodges with more than 150 members. So those members who join on a one-day class, who join a lodge with more than 150 members, 72% of those guys dropped out.
Wow.
What?
Dude, do you know what that means? It is emphatic proof that the larger your lodge is, the less likely you are to connect buddy. And like this just makes a major bullet point for lodges to keep it under 40
like,
or whatever.
Like Andrew Hammer is observing the craft, you know, once the like, British style 30 members that, and you know, you carve off.
That's not even British style. Pretty much most lodges outside of continental Freemasonry have Guild that Hall? Sense of 30, 40 people is enough, you know, and
that's
I
crazy.
Bring that up. Yeah. Look at that.
So with the standard class system with the 3 days separately, there's not that much variation though. 51, 51, and 49.
Oh, interesting.
But when you take into effect this chance to advance or the 1 day classes, the numbers become very skewed. But with the standard path, they're pretty close together.
With your theory being that it's the lack of integration, it's the lack of connection.
I think that if we look at one other slide here, let me bring it up. If I tie the two together, I think it'll make sense. Here, I'll share this one. Okay. So Scottish Rite did that study and they kept them for 3 years because they had already basically paid dues for 3 years. We don't do that in Kansas. You only pay the balance of your first year. So if you come in October, you only pay the last quarter. That's why we have members who drop out in the first 12 months. But we still see the 3 year spike. There's a huge spike at year three.
Wow.
So if you don't engage these members within the first 36 months, they're gone.
So for probably the same reasons as the Scottish Rite?
I would say, yeah, if you don't engage somebody, they don't get the value. They don't become part of the system. It doesn't become a habit to go to lodge. There's lots of things that play into that value equation. But I think it's harder for a large lodge to actually engage that member. I can't say it exactly as our ritual says tonight, but every place I've been, there's a certain part of the opening and closing that tells you what the master is supposed to do in the lodge. And he's supposed to give the guy something to do. He is the one who is supposed to direct the people who are members of that lodge of what they're supposed to be doing. Well, if you have 200, 300, 1500 members, you can't give them something to do. There's not enough work to go around.
Yeah, that's a super interesting point. There was a great article by Alphonse Cerza called Masonic Unemployment. And he ties it back to some amazing just correlations to the way like the U.S. economy works. And he ties it down to the lodge level. And it's a really brilliant paper. I'll have to shoot it over to you if you haven't already seen it. But my question, though, you see that 3 year drop. I almost wonder, is there a case to be made that you keep your lodge small and you raise one candidate not sooner than once every 3 years? Like every 3 years, you can have one.
So let me, you know, I think it's interesting because when I talk about membership data or most worshipful does, like everyone's got their own solution that they're going to bring to the table. Well, if we only did this, if we only did more education, if we only did more festa boards, if we only did more green beans, Joe, then that will keep membership active. And you know, when people ask me, all right smarty pants, what's the oh we lost Joe, that's it. what's the answer? The answer is it depends. Because there's too many variables to account for when you're talking about jurisdictions that have tens of thousands of different people with different interests, with different, you know, value propositions on what Masonry is. And that kind of, it's a good segue into, you know, going back to an earlier episode of the Masonic Roundtable where we talked about, like, the Masonic factory. Thinking of, like, the customer factory for any business, it's not just about getting customers in the door. It's also taking care of them once they're in, just like membership.
But John, Freemasonry isn't a business. It's something better.
Well, if we could think like it's business time and adapt a corporate mindset into Freemasonry, then you would get something like this where...
buy my book.
Buy my book. That, you know, when you look at it, imagine if, you know, acquisition is just how do we get new members in? This is where one-day classes live. This is where bring-a-friend nights live. This is all these variables that we tweak here. And we don't often think about what happens on the back end. What does activation mean? Like, the first good experience you have with that product, this being Masonry, is it a good experience? Like, is the initiatic experience a good experience? To Robert's point, that's where you start thinking here. Are we giving them good value at this step of the process? And then they become a dues-paying member, hence revenue. But really, it's that, what's that lifetime value of membership? What's the average membership length, for example, that we're looking at? But you can't stop there. Jason?
Yeah, sorry, I keep interrupting you tonight. this gets back to the bifurcation, to quote Robert's favorite word, between first, you know, first touch customers and repeat customers. And right. So we're seeing here, one-day classes are great at getting new customers in.
Right here.
But where Masonry as a whole is struggling is with providing the repeat value so your customers keep coming back.
Bingo. Exactly. And that's exactly the data that Most Worshipful found. This is the data, you know, that's coming out of, you know, some of the, you know, the non-payment of dues numbers.
So that's the magic question, right? Like, we've figured out this issue. So
which one
issue.
Do you do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I almost wonder too, like, did Masonry try to solve this? And that's why there's all these degrees out there, right? You get all these degrees, you keep them active.
Just one more.
Chase all the degrees. Yeah, just one more degree. It's like, right, the first MLM known to existence. So, well, what do you, like, Most Worshipful, when you ran these numbers, like, did you have an inclination where you just started, like, just tripping over all of your thoughts? Like, well, what's the key to keeping them longer than 3 years? Like, is there a program? Is it something you have to, you know?
Actually, I think it goes back to what jokingly was just said. Do we just keep them going through degrees? I mean, that jokingly,
titles.
More titles, more degrees, more appendant bodies. But if we think about why we have all those degrees and why we have all those appendant bodies, it's because those brothers are looking for something they're not finding in the Blue Lodge. If they were finding it in Blue Lodge and getting the experience they wanted, they wouldn't go any farther. Okay. And we can speculate why there's theories that it goes back to the Boston Convention. And that's probably a valid theory. We made Masonry know it's not fun anymore. So now we need fellowship. We have to go to the shrine. If we need education, we have to go to the Scottish Rite. If we want spirituality, we have to go to the York Rite. Well, at one time, that was all in the Blue Lodge. Right. The value was all in the lodge. And that's the way it is in a lot of other areas across the world is you get all those things in Blue Lodge. You don't have to go look for it somewhere else. I think the key to bringing value first off is ask the people what they want before we bring them in.
What?
Well, I just wanted to touch on something that Most Worshipful Michael said. You kind of hit the nail on the head there. And again, we're very cloistered. Most of us, you know, a lot of Masons don't get to travel across the border to see Masonry and other types of the world. You know, a few of us are lucky to do so, but most are not. So they're just used to their own provincial, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, provincial type of Masonry. You know, it's what they're accustomed to. But you just said something super profound that a lot of American Masons don't realize. When you join lodges in South America or you join lodges in some parts of Europe, you're waiting and dying and hoping for years that you'll get the chance to become initiated, right? That whole process of taking someone, a prospect, and turning them into a candidate is a long process. It's not, hey, welcome, here's a petition, I'll sign it, I don't even know you, and I'll give it to my buddy here and he'll sign it too, and you know, you can get your EA degree next week. That is not what happens in most other parts of the world. It takes a very long time, and you have to build this really profound level of trust with the people that you're going to, you know, enter into this engagement with. And we don't do that here. We just don't.
So I think you hit the nail on the head too, because one way to look at this model is not acquisition of full-on Masonic membership, but now we can say, what is their first value experience just meeting the brothers, right? Driving retention as a profane, driving retention as an EA, right, for that many years, that is still value that's being created for that brother, all right, and so that it eventually turns into a lifetime member, right? But in this model, we've shifted it from, we'll just give you all the degrees from step one to step two, but now, no, we're actually going to drag step two out, but we're going to give you step two as the most amazing, introspective, fraternal experience you can get. And that, you know, that will hopefully give you and then the membership a greater return on investment.
And keep you longing for more. That's the, sorry.
And that degree work is going to be put on by people that you've built a relationship with over the last 6 to 12 months. It's not going to be guys you've never met before coming in to do your degree work. You've known these guys. You've sat down, you broke bread with them. You've gone out and had drinks with them. You know these people. It's much more profound and much more of a value quantity there if the degree work's done by people you know.
Damn. Most worshipful. I mean, like what you just described is exactly what we tell everybody that we do, right? Like we're supposed to care about each other, to know each other.
Yes.
I'm supposed to cry with you when you lose your job or a loved one. I'm supposed to celebrate and buy you a drink when you get a new promotion. You know, we're supposed to be that way. And to, you know, if your lodge members are the people that you do this stuff with and they're the people who put on this degree, like how much more special is that? I mean, it's a rarity. You know how many times they just bring in 10 ringers from the district to put on the degree work. And the night of the degree, 15 of the people at his 20-person attended degree are never going to be there again until he goes to witness another degree and they need more ringers. I mean, it's that's wild.
And that gets back to the – oh, sorry. I keep interrupting.
Go ahead, please.
I'm getting expelled.
Because I file charges on even myself. So be careful.
Nice.
Here's your Lodge of Kansas Lodge of Research paper. We're just going to tear that in half.
Well, then so you're not story, getting another article.
True story. I have actually filed Masonic charges on myself. That's not a topic for tonight, though.
Were we bored that month or something? Or what? The point I was
Master of a Lodge has Master of Lodge has certain duties, and if he can't fulfill those duties, it's a Masonic offense.
Man, that's funny.
He is hardcore.
I'll say that for the bonus track.
Replace his bumper with hardcore. I totally forgot my point. Oh, I remember my point. So I try to bring this up, and Robert really touched on it very well, where, you know, you really are supposed to engender. I mean, the purpose of initiation, right, and going through Masonic initiation is to build that genuine love with this group of people, right? And I know some Masons look at me and they're like, well, what do you mean? We're like fraternity brothers and that kind of thing. I'm like, no, I'm supposed to genuinely love and just care the hell out of you. And it's I say this all the time. It's very hard to do with a lodge of 250 people. I cannot have 250 best friends. We're not built as human beings to do that. You're not supposed to have that many intimate relationships in your life. So that gets back to the whole size of the lodge thing is
Dunbar's
how many
number.
People can I be best friends with, right? So,
yeah, there's a theory of intimate relationships, right? That there's an upper limit to how many the human can have on average, and it's about 150 people maximum, like of close relationships. And so basically, if you think you know everybody in your 250 plus person lodge, you're kidding yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I touched on it earlier too. We're not asking these people what they want out of masonry before we initiate them. Right. funny, not funny example. You've probably heard this before, but I'm going to tell it tonight because I love the story because it perfectly points out this fact. I was at a degree that we did courtesy work for another lodge. So here we are. We don't know this guy. We're not the people he's become friends with. The ringers, they brought in the ringers. And I was a district or area deputy, so I had my fancy collar and fancy apron on. And after the degree work, we're sitting and having some cake. And the guy goes, I need to talk to you in private. Can you come out here in the hallway so I can talk to you? Yeah. What do you need, brother? I need you to teach me the spells now. The spells.
I'm sorry, the spells?
You guys are the spells. You guys are wizards and magicians, right? So now you can teach me the spells. Nope. Can't do that. Sorry. Yeah. Nobody asked him why he wanted to join. He was going to get the spells. So good.
Did you tell him that he has not yet reached a high enough level in masonry?
Yeah,
to find those Luciferian secrets.
98 or 99. I can't remember which level that is, but we'll get there.
That was
maybe 360 on some theories. Yeah,
that was a perfect opportunity to hand him a Scottish Rite petition, and you failed hard.
Yes, I did.
We're just the gateway. You have to walk through it.
That's right.
So speaking of statistics, also just another fun fact, the Masonic Services Association of North America actually updated their website this week, where for a while they had done a tech refresh and updated the aesthetics without adding any content, specifically the only content I care about on there, which is the membership statistics. So, updated with 2019 and 2020 numbers, finally, we can see that we are below 1 million Masons.
Ew.
So we are under, we're, according to the data provided by the grant secretaries who have no incentive to not tell the truth, we have 898,000 Master Masons in the mainstream convention Grand Masters.
And I think that includes plurals in some jurisdictions.
Well, funny you say that. It's inconsistent. So, yes, you can at least say at least one of these jurisdictions includes plurals, probably most of them, double counting members. Yeah, so that's interesting. Well,
it definitely includes dual members, those who belong to separate jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. If I were a member of two different states, then that would be double counted. Yeah, so looking at specific states, why don't we go head on over to Kansas and see what we got going on here. So in Kansas, we actually are looking at 2017, 2018 with the gain loss, 2019 gain loss, and 2020 gain loss. Heading all the way to the bottom, Kansas looks like has 13,814 members as of 2020. With a loss, a one-year loss of 1,000 members. What I find,
and we're down another. We're down another 800 from there, so far this year.
Already, wow! For 2021, and so we've talked about that, where it's losses are a combination of deaths, demits, expulsions, and all that, right? So it is multifaceted, right? You can't solve all of it all at once. But what I found fascinating in this updated set of data. Again, I haven't had the time to put it in my other spreadsheets. Yes, I have spreadsheets on this stuff, but there are a couple jurisdictions that went up in 2020. During a majority pandemic year, we've had a few jurisdictions that have reported a gain in membership. So we have California with a gain of 461. We have, not just California, we have New Jersey with a gain of 442. New York with a gain of 49 members. Oregon with a gain of 57 members. Like, wait a minute. This is unheard of. Trust me when I say, looking at this data since 1924, to have this many jurisdictions go up since at least 1959 is unheard of.
Well, so think about this, though. It might not be as good as you think. Oh, because California has one of the easiest pieces, one of the easiest ways to charter a new lodge. And when you charter a new lodge, you have plural members. If they're reporting plurals, the 461 members, 200 of them could just be duals. And like
even if not, even if they're actively raising, then they're still that we don't have that long-term, you know, lifetime value.
That's right. And what I would be interested in doing, and maybe I'll just knock it out tomorrow or something instead of working. I'm going to take, you could take this entire sheet, right? And you could show the,
I'll send you my,
you could like equalize it, right? And you could say which states have the best retention overall or who has the least or who has lost the most based on percentage alone.
Right.
If you can isolate the NPDs.
Well, that's what you can't from this.
Can't
data.
Do that from here, yeah.
Right, you can't do it from MSAN.
It's just a it's just a top line number. It doesn't tell you anything behind. Are all of them? Are people having babies and making them master maces, or are they dying at twice the rate? Who you know? Are people, you know, getting massive amounts of cancer or something? You, like you don't know without digging through the data.
Well, let me know which jurisdiction is getting that massive amount of cancer, and I won't move there. So.
Right.
Feel free to let me know.
But so, I mean, it's so here's what totally gets me like riled up. We have not one, not two, but like four or five jurisdictions that have grown in membership during a pandemic, and we're just like, oh, you know, like what are they doing? What are they doing? That's changing the numbers, changing the trajectory.
Well, I think new generation of people like us, we have no problem reaching across the lines to figure it out.
During a pandemic, though? I mean, like, that's fascinating.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and you'll all agree with me, I did way more masonry than I've ever done before during the pandemic. You know, if you really want to look at it that way, you know, did we do degrees? No, but. You know, I definitely met more people that were Masons during the pandemic sitting here in my jammies than I did, you know, during a typical non-pandemic year of going to stale meetings. So does that equate to, you know, 57 new Masons in Oregon? No, they probably left here. So and all moved there in 1 year. But, you know, it's you know, it gets back to the reasons why. And but, you know. Like we said in the green room, you know, it's staying pretty on course to your projections there, Brother John.
You know, so yeah, with those other blips, yeah, for the most part, the majority is still going down. It's still at, you know, we're under a million Masons. We're on the same trajectory, on the same delta by year. So, you know, people say, oh, but we're having great experience in my local lodge. I'm all for that. I'm happy. And it's anecdotal, right? So it's like, great. You may have a kick butt lodge, but the five lodges in your district may be suffering. So until we take those lessons learned from your lodge and repeat those across the other lodges in your district, in your region, in your state, you know, we still aren't turning the boat fast enough.
Well, I can tell you what.
Implement. Oh, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I can tell you from Kansas, one of the things that kept our number as low as it was both of my lodges, we did not suspend anybody for non-payment of dues last year. We remitted all the dues because of, oh, it could have been COVID that affected them. So many people were out of work, blah, blah, blah. Both of my lodges remitted dues for everybody that would have been suspended normally.
That's one way to get the numbers up. I like it.
So
if we never take them off the books.
So this year's data is going to be really, really interesting then to see what percentage of those brethren that had their dues remitted last year go NPD this year.
Oh, once everything's back, you
potentially.
Mean?
Yeah, that might yield some interesting, you know, indicators.
So, yeah, at a macro level, if you see this blip and it goes up in 2020 during the pandemic, but then down when things resume then you would, that would be one plausible explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So in the interest of time, what would you conclude from your research, Most Worshipful, about what we should do next?
Well, I do have some good news, because the last thing I really did with all the data was I took 5-year time slices.
Yes.
So from 1996 to 2001, 97 to 2002, and so on. So 5-year time slices, so that I could capture that 3-year peak in, mm-hmm. in the retention. So what we ended up with was a graph that looks like this.
Ooh.
The good news is, since 2010, we've been on a steady uptick. And as of 2015, we're at almost 70% retention overall, which is far above anything we've seen in the last 25 years. Hopefully it continues. Coming January, I'll have the information to pull 2016 and see if we're on that same trajectory. I hope we are. So there is good news. There must be something we're doing that's retaining more members. And in Kansas, I know that our strategic plan started in 2020 and 2010, and it's really emphasized the Masonic experience. That's been the big emphasis of the strategic plan at the lodge level. And so I think we're tying that strategic plan and that Masonic experience into the value equation. So people are staying around more than what they used to. Couple interesting dates. 1997 was the lowest retention rate, 45%. That was the first year we had 1-day classes. So I don't know if that's what did it, but you know, since I don't really care for 1-day classes, I like to make that connection. So.
And you're allowed to.
Yes. Awesome. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up for the final question. And the final question is, which you ought to think about this really hard. Given all the data you've seen tonight, all of the facts, figures, assumptions, projections, and all that, what is one thing you would recommend to improve the projection of Masonic membership? So let's start with Jason Richards. What is one thing that you would do to flatten the curve, grow the curve?
Institute an entrance survey. You hand in your petition along with a completed survey of your expectations and desires for your Masonic experience.
Love it. Awesome. Thank you. How about you, Joe? What do you think?
I mean, I think the one big thing that many places can do and get a really quick rate of return on is make the lodge experience focus completely on the candidate, not on the grumpy past master that's sitting in the back yelling at you. Everything be about the candidate experience. Make it something to strive for and something to be proud of. And I think that will definitely turn things around.
Hoorah. Okay. Let's head over to Robert Johnson. What's one thing you would recommend?
I think Joe mentioned, you know, making it about the candidate. But I think also having a lodge culture, implementing a lodge culture of togetherness, a lodge culture of inclusiveness with your members, so that when they ask for something, your lodge can actually provide it. Because not because you asked, because they want you to be satisfied as a member, and seeing you happy makes them happy, right? Like if I have a member and he says, gosh, I really wish we could get a presentation on music here. Well, if he takes that to the master of the lodge, maybe the master of the lodge then shoots an email off to the local college and has a professor come out for the night at the next meeting to give education on, you know, music theory or something. Like those kinds of things, just those simple ideas, making sure that, you know, you're giving them what they asked for. And it ties to what Jason said too. Like you got to know what they're coming in for, because you don't want them asking for the spells. So, yeah. And the math is simple, right? Like if you control who's coming in and for what reason, you know why they're there, the probability that they're going to leave for not having it diminishes, thereby, you know, increasing your percentage of retention.
It also gives you a benchmark.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you know the expectations, you can more easily arrive at your Masonic value proposition.
Bingo.
And that's how you make Masonry more relevant than it is today.
I'm going to give you an Alex Powers 100%.
Love it.
I love you, Alex.
All right.
Love you, Alex.
Love you, Alex.
All right, Kay, most worshipful, do you love Alex Powers?
Well, we all love Alex Powers, of course. <We do.
laughs> Host of the Historical Light podcast.
He lives 45 minutes from me, so yeah. I would take it a step back. I think that survey needs to be done before you even give them a petition. Ooh. And I say that because my point is we have to stop being afraid of sending those guys to a lodge that's going to give them what they want. It may not be your lodge. We all love to have petitioners. But quite frankly, if your lodge is a service organization type lodge, and this guy wants the esoteric contemplative type masonry, if you do that survey before you give him the petition and say, you know what, I would love to have you as part of my lodge, brother, but there's a lodge 45 minutes away that does exactly what you're asking for. Go visit with those guys and see if maybe you'd rather join that lodge. Also, we need to stop being afraid to say, you know, what you're looking for really isn't masonry. What you're looking for may be the Rotary Club, the Kiwanis Club, the Lions Spells. Club. It's yeah, whatever, yeah. The Harry Potter group down the road, I don't know. But we have to stop being afraid of telling these people it's okay to go somewhere else. It's okay to go to that other lodge to find what you're looking for. It's okay to go to the Kiwanis and the Lions Club. Just make sure we can give them what they want if we're going to bring them into to our lodge.
Awesome. Well, hey, most worshipful, I want to speak on behalf of all of the hosts here. I want to definitely thank you for everything you do for Freemasonry and for especially us membership statistics nerds, because this is fascinating. You answered the question that a lot of jurisdictions either assumed or didn't have the data or way to collect for. And so you've definitely
they're just scared right of there. The data.
Yeah. Why find out, you know, why step on the scale if I don't want to know how much I weigh, right? So that's what's going on there. And it's not to point fingers. It's to make things better. And again, you're doing it for all the right reasons. And I thank you for your service to the craft for that. What I would do if I were a Grand Master for the day, I would definitely, for one, make sure all Grand jurisdictions have some sort of automated database member management system. Because many do not, which makes it hard to track things like this. So if you don't know what you don't measure. And so it's really important to at least start collecting the data now, so that way you can have nerds like us to go look through this and find the bright spots in the data. If numbers are going up, now we know where to look. It's just like the check engine light on your car. It just tells you, hey, there's something you need to pay attention to. Let's go do something about that. It's not going to tell you why the check engine light is on, but it's something that if you don't know about it, you can't improve it or you can't fix it. So that would be my big thing. It's a baby step towards, you know, trying all the variety of solutions that everyone has. And I'm all about letting, you know, 1,000 flowers bloom and let them all try different things so that we can get those bright spots to grow. So, again, thank you very much, most worshipful, for your time tonight. I know you're a busy man, and again, it's been so great to just nerd out on this stuff with you. So,
my pleasure.
Thank you. All right, I want to thank you all very much for watching, and stick around for the next 15 minutes or so. We'll do a little episode by episode breakdown of episode 9 of The Lost Symbol on Peacock. So, come back here, and if you like that kind of stuff, subscribe. All right. With that, thank you all very much for watching, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.